Hare Krishna, we are continuing on the second part of day second by His Grace on Shivadan Prabhu on 24th of December 2013. Hare Krishna.
Okay. So, any doubts so far on our discussion? Maybe we can take one or two.
I just wanted to understand the difference between the person who is inquisitive and the jnani.
The jnanasu or the inquisitive is one who is essentially inquisitive to get more knowledge, and it's mostly referring to just scholarly knowledge, right? So therefore it's a sort of material desire. That's jnanasu, inquisitive. And the jnani, as we were referring to these verses, the jnani refers to one who is essentially, he has knowledge of the Supreme Lord, he loves the Supreme Lord, he worships the Supreme Lord, but at the same time he has a small tinge, practically a very small trace of a desire of the contamination of jnana, and that is he has some attraction for the impersonal Brahman. Right? It's not very prominent. A small trace, we can say, of this attraction towards impersonal Brahman. And so therefore, they fall in this category of Jnana Mishra Bhakti. But still, because they already have, they already understand the personality of Godhead, they already have love for the Lord, so therefore they are very dear to the Lord also. Okay?
Yes, sir. Just on that, follow-up question from that. Why is the Jnana Mishra Bhakti attracted to impersonalism? What's that attraction based on? There's no variegatedness, and essentially, what is so attractive about that?
Yes, so at a certain point of time before, they had that attraction, right? They had that attraction, and now even though they understand about the personality of Godhead, they have still not completely lost that attraction. And this point actually we'll be discussing further in 12.5, where Krishna explains that how the jnani, that is the problem with the jnani, that is this attraction to the impersonal Brahman, it is a problem both in practice and even at the stage of perfection. When they come in association with devotees and they understand about the personality of Godhead and the glory of devotional service to the personality of God, but still it's like a deep-rooted conception which is very difficult to give up. Right? So they had a previous attraction to the impersonal Brahman, and that is still lingering on. They have still not lost it. And that is the Mishra, that is the contamination in their bhakti. Okay? Okay, fine. One last question.
So, an impersonalist, can he become a devotee? Or is he given a chance to become a devotee in the next life? By chance, he is from this life now.
Okay, your questions will be answered in the further part of the class. Okay, fine. Okay, fine. So, we would like to have a quick exercise, right? We want to be really quick. You know, something like our extempore presentations which we had yesterday. But this is a presentation of a different form, okay? So, we would like to divide the class into 8 groups. Okay, so start counting 1 to 8.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
What did you say? 5.
6.
7. 8.
Okay, okay, say a little loud.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 1. Two.
Okay.
Four.
Three.
Four.
Three. Okay.
Four.
Four.
Five.
Six.
Seven.
Eight.
One.
Two. three, four. Okay, so make just make your respective groups all the 1, 2, 3, 4 get together. So just we'll go in sequence so it becomes easy. Maybe one come here. Hello, one come here. Who's here? One. One is here. Two. Who's two? Two come here. Three. Who's three? Three come here. Three here. Three come here. Yeah, yeah. Just stand around here. Four come here. Yeah, here. Four. Okay, here three. Four, four. Four is here. Four. Number four. Number four.
Whoever has said four. Quickly, right?
Yeah. Whoever has said number four.
Four.
Okay, fine. Five. You're five? You're seven. Okay, five. Five. That's seven. Who's six? Who's six? Six. Gather around here. Whoever is six, gather around here. Six. You're six? Okay, fine. That's fine. And who's, where's eight? Where's eight? Good. Okay, where's one? Where's one? Okay, one. Two. Two, three, four. Four, five, seven, six, and eight. Good. Okay, now listen what you're supposed to do. Yeah, almost everyone has three only. Some have four. Some have four. It's all right. It's okay. Okay. So if you want, you can occupy chairs or you can stand. What, it's up to you. You can stand otherwise. Just stand for a few minutes, okay? Okay. So what you have to do is this. Hari Bhav, please listen. You're given 3 minutes for preparation. Okay? Just 3 minutes. On count. So you have to count 3 minutes. Now with the 3 minutes, what you have to do is, we will give you a chit which is indicating one of these eight types of people, right? You know the eight which we're talking about. Four who surrender, four who do not. So we'll be giving you a chit which is indicating that. So amongst your group, one of you has to be a book distributor and the others in the group have to act that particular category of person. But you do not disclose it. That is for the audience to reveal. Okay? So you don't disclose which category you're acting, but you act in such a way that the rest of the audience understands, or is supposed to understand, which category you're representing. Is that clear? Any doubts in the exercise? Okay, so one of you book distributor, as others are receiving the book, so those who are receiving the book should act in that category. Okay, should manifest those qualities. Only 3 minutes for preparation, and 2 minutes for demonstration. Okay? Ready? Okay, so now I'm passing on the chips. Okay?
I'm going to go to the hospital.
Please see later on. Please sit. What's that? That's for you. Okay. Can somebody please close the door? Somebody would like to keep a time? Any timekeepers? Okay, fine. Okay, so 2 minutes. Okay, the karsat is yours.
I will second you. She will tell me how it is.
Okay, so when the karsat rings, it's a humble request. Please wind up your presentation. Okay? 2 minutes, 2 minutes. Okay. Is 2 minutes all right, or you feel it's too short?
It's all right.
It's all right. Okay, fine. Okay, 2 minutes. Okay, so 2 minutes you ring the bell and we humbly request you to wind up. Okay? Fine. So I'm just going random, any group. So everyone has to be prepared. We are not going in sequence. Okay? So group number 4. Okay, you have the 2 mics if you want. You want mics? No. Do you want the mic?
No.
Called
the
Bhagavad
Gita.
Is this a spiritual book?
Yes, it is, sir.
Is this talking about Atma,
soul? Yes, the difference between the soul and the body. Yes.
Wow, a book that talks about the difference between the soul and the body.
That's great. Amazing. Fantastic. Coincidence. This is great. We'll take all of your books.
Haribo! So, okay, so now the audience has to tell what they were talking about. You take it. Okay, thank you. Haribo! Okay, fine. So now group number 7.
Yeah.
Here, Haribo.
Hey, excuse me, this is for you.
Yeah, what is it?
No. Wonderful book on knowledge of the Supreme.
I was always thinking about how this world is going on and everything. I like to keep them on.
Yes, the Supreme. You know that there is a Supreme Nature?
Yeah, but I want some knowledge, only knowledge. Supreme Nature, God.
Look, if you know about the Supreme Nature, you can be free from the material nature. You know material nature can only bind you?
Yeah.
You want to be free? You want to be free from anger, from so many things that actually divert your attention and get you frustrated. Is this ever
happened? Knowledge?
Yeah. Yeah, it's knowledge. It's a means that can actually... This is knowledge, freedom, and respect.
Ah,
they always
can't explain everything. Yeah, okay, I like it. Okay, I can show this
to my friend.
This is college.
Yeah, there's some law of knowledge in
there. How much?
Only,
Free.
Yes, it's free for you. Or you can pay a
donation.
Yes, you can pay a donation, no problem.
Thank you very much.
Oh, yes, and one more.
Haribo! So, who's that? Is you alright?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Haribo! Jigyasu. Okay. Now, group number 1? Yeah. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. How are you? Good. I have this lovely book called Bhagavad Gita. Would you like to take a book for a small donation?
Do you have any cigarettes?
Gita speaks about the difference between the body and the soul, which you like to read.
What are the words?
It's basically about self-realization.
No, it's not banking, that's a concept.
Would you like to take a Bhagavad Gita or
Hare Krishna, maybe just to ask you this, would you look sober? Would you like to take
a bite? I need something to drink.
I need something to drink.
Yeah, I mean, look. I'm smoking. Haribo! Okay, you ask them.
Haribo!
Haribo! Okay, so why do you say it's an aradama?
Because they're all about
you. Okay, so yeah, that's what Prabhupada describes about. Of course, there could be different gradations. I mean, of course, Prabhupada says the classic example is Jagai and Madhai, but the definition says somebody who's socially and politically, he's socially and politically well situated, but then. He doesn't follow religious principles. So yes, he could be, because he has no religious principles, then yes, he could be drunk, he could be doing all these funny things also. But at the same time, he also may have some social and political situation. Okay, fine, thank you. So next is group 5.
Hare Krishna.
Oh,
this is for you. It's a nice book.
Books are okay, but I'm busy calling my money and I have a lot of things to think of.
Actually, this book talks about money. Do you want to make more money?
Yes, I
am. Money? Do you want money? Yes. I'll show you exactly how this book will help you get more money.
I'll show you.
Oh, really? Yeah. The last verse of Gita says that those who read Gita, they get victory. Do you want victory?
Yes.
Do you want happiness?
Yeah.
Do you want money?
Yes.
Exactly. This book will tell you exactly how to get more money.
Take me. Yes. Oh.
Okay.
You have to give a donation for this.
Donation.
Okay. I can give you a card, then I'll come and collect money from you later.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Haribo! Okay, I'm done. Okay, Artharthi. Okay, fine. Artharthi, desire of wealth.
Oh, I thought
he
was a
Buddha. Well, could be a combination. Okay, now who's remaining?
Three, six, and eight.
Four are remaining, right?
Two,
three, six, and eight. Okay, six. Okay, Artho, Haribo! Thank you very much. So now, eight.
My God.
six. Oh, you don't need the mic? Fine.
So when you got there, about 3 o'clock, then about 5 o'clock, and you got drinks with the work guys.
Hey, big man! How you doing?
I'm very bummed with no job.
Hey, you?
Congratulations, Michael, how you doing?
Good, right, we've got something good for you today. We've got something good for you today, isn't that right?
Right, you've got this. Yes, thank you. You have a BBR?
Yes, I love it.
You guys, lunch is fast. It's not like this. This is something you do when you retire.
Sounds like you are getting something. Getting something big, right? You're into big bananas?
I think I already have it, don't you know?
Yeah.
You sound like
I got the wife, I got the boat, I got the
ski. Hold that for me, sir.
What? I think your book is too loud. You want to read it?
For me, what? I want to introduce you to a brand new... You seem like you guys are into a sort of business or something. I want to introduce you to a
big
brand new
business.
Bhagavad Gita. As it is.
My God, this guy... Tom,
please tell this guy how much I charge to speak to people.
I'm not gonna even think about that. This is a waste of time. Let's go.
Hey!
Come on, listen up.
You guys think I'm hard workers.
You ask them. Okay, Haribo. Okay, fine. So, who's doing it? One?
Three.
One and three. Okay?
Two and three.
Two and three. Okay, fine. Two come.
Yes, sir. I'm from Manipur.
Oh,
I'm behind it.
Yes, sir.
I have something for you. Do you want some book? Oh. You know, whatever you require for scientific knowledge, you have everything here.
Everything in this book, huh?
Yes. You don't need to go physics and chemistry. You just read this book, you have everything.
Okay, what is your philosophy?
Oh, this guy looks like a philosopher. You will get all the happiness whatever you require.
How is that?
If explaining Krishna is the supreme attribute of Godhead, you know?
Godhead?
Yes! Godhead!
Oh, God doesn't exist.
No, there are many gods, Lakshmi, Shiva, Durga.
But he is supreme personality of Godhead. If you receive what, you will get everything. Don't worry, you just take this book and read it. This guy is avoided. Don't go yet and yet read it.
Haribo!
Hey, Arjun, hey, Haribo!
I
want to
take a book.
Okay, cool,
yeah. No, you are spiritual!
Okay, my brother again. Haribo! Okay, fine. So the last room?
Maya.
On this mic? Yeah.
Hey, 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 come here, come here, come here. Over. You just stand there. I gotta talk to Jagan Mata here. You know what your problem is? See this picture right here? See men being controlled by these women on these strings right here? No, they're not drinking, but that's your problem. You're totally controlled by these women. Like you're like a little puppet, and that's why you need this book. Okay? And you know you're going straight to hell. You know that. You know, you've already thought about going straight to hell. That is why you need this book. And this poor drunk man right here,
grab the book. Go back.
No. I
can't.
You're at least great to
see.
You pray, how are you relating? You destroy family.
We are destroying family?
Yes. You take the kids from the family?
It's quite... Yeah, what's it?
Ashram
Brahman. Thank you very much, Haribo!
Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for your nice presentation. And so now we go ahead with the rest of this chapter. So, the next section from 2025 is Misplaced Surrender, Demigod Worshippers and the Impersonalists. So the connection between the previous section and this section is this. So the Acharya is explaining this, and most of the Acharya's commentaries we find that it's like a conversation between Arjuna and Krishna, a direct conversation. And so the question is, so Arjuna asks a sort of question. He says, okay, those who come to you even with material desires, you are saying that they're udara, they're magnanimous souls, and they're very dear to you. But what if somebody has material desires and doesn't come to you, but goes to the demigod? Then what? So Arjuna is asking that question. And in reply to that, Krishna is speaking the rest of these verses. And so essentially, these verses are speaking about demigod worship and the impersonalists. So let's recite verse number 20. Kamaise se ritajnana prapatyante anya devata tam tam niyamam asthaya prakritya niyatasvaya. Those whose intelligence has been stolen by material desires surrender unto demigods and follow the particular rules and regulations of worship according to their own nature. So Krishna calls them ritajnana. Ritajnana means those who have poor knowledge, ritajnana, or unintelligent people, right? So they go to the demigods to fulfill their material desires. And we already discussed this point. Why do some go to the demigods and why do some come to the supreme lords when they have material desires? Why? Yes, Prabhu.
Those who go to the Supreme Lord for fulfilling their material desires, that's because they have pious spirits.
Okay, fine. Okay, that's one reason. Okay, they're pious spirits.
What's another reason? Yes, Sekhru?
They can get association with devotees.
No. We are talking about somebody who comes, who has material desires, and he goes to the demigods or he goes to the Lord. Of course, if somebody comes or gets association of the devotees, that could be one possible reason. That could be one possible reason. Yeah?
People often go to the demigods because they don't know who to go to. So they go to someone and they say,
well, stay in the city. Okay, fine. Possible. We're looking for a little... okay, these are practical reasons, definitely true. Something a little more philosophical reason, yes, true.
Those who go to demigods are less intelligent.
Yes, they are less intelligent, that is their characteristic. But why they are less intelligent? What is the root reason? Yes, true.
Because they want to make a result.
No, that's the reason, that's what we're speaking about. We're speaking about people who have material desires. But the question is, okay, they have material desires, why do some go to the Supreme Lord and why do some go to demigods?
Is it selfishness? They're more inclined to thinking about...
Well, they are all selfish. They have material desires means they're selfish, but why the difference of approach?
They can go also to the Supreme Lord and he also fulfills their desires.
Yes, that is true, but why doesn't everyone go to the Supreme Lord, or why doesn't everyone go to the... Why do you find this different? Somebody is going to demigods, somebody is going to the Supreme Lord. Why the difference?
I was going to say, Krishna, when he fulfills your desires, he does it in a way that he makes spiritual advancement.
Uh-huh. Okay, fine. Yeah, that's the point. The material mode, right? Because of the influence of the mode. Somebody who is in lower modes of passion and ignorance, then he goes usually to demigods. Somebody who is in mode of goodness, there's more likelihood that he goes to Vishnu, even for the fulfillment of material desires. Okay? So he goes to the demigods for fulfillment of various material desires. And then Krishna is speaking the next few verses about these demigod worshippers. And these are also important verses for us to understand. 21, let's recite this also. Yo yo yam yam tanum bhakta shraddhaya chitam icchati tasya tasya chalam shraddham tameva vidadamyaham. I am in everyone's heart is a super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. So even the faith for a worshipper of demigod to worship that demigod comes from the Supreme Lord. And Prabhupada is giving a really wonderful purport, and especially the first paragraph. Somebody could just read the first paragraph of the purport.
God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have... God has given independence to everyone. Therefore, if a person desires to have material enjoyment and wants very sincerely to have such facilities from the material demigod, the Supreme Lord, as super soul in everyone's heart, understands and gives facilities to such persons. How many are we going?
First paragraph.
Oh, okay. As the Supreme Father of all living entities, he does not interfere with their independence, but gives all facilities so that they can fulfill their material desires. Some may ask why the all-powerful God gives facilities to the living entity for enjoying this material world, and so lets them fall into the trap of illusionary energy. The answer is that if the Supreme Lord, as Supersoul, does not give such facilities, then there is no meaning to independence. Therefore, he gives everyone full independence, whatever one likes. But his ultimate instruction, we find in Bhagavad Gita, one should give up all other engagements and fully surrender unto him. That will make man happy.
Thank you. Yes, so Prabhupada is writing, Krishna doesn't interfere with the independence of the living entity, so he has a choice where to go. But now the next question arises, why Krishna doesn't interfere with the independence of the living entity? If he wants, he is the supreme controller, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Lord. So if Krishna wants, then he can influence the living entity. And he can tell him, you just have to go to the Supreme Lord, no need to go to demigods. So why doesn't Krishna interfere with that minute independence of the living entity?
Out of love.
Who's saying? Yes, Prabhu.
Out of love.
What do you mean, out of love?
He's not interfering
with
independence,
out of love. I mean, if you say he's not interfering in independence out of love, if he really loved the living entity, then he should force everyone to come to him, isn't it?
Prabhu,
Hold on. If he really loves the living entity, because that's the ultimate benefit of the living entity, so he should force everyone to come to him. He should not allow anyone to go to demigod. Isn't it? If he really loves the living entity. Yes, bro. Yeah, that's right. Is it? It is free will. So my question is, why doesn't he interfere with that free will? Yes, bro.
Because under this is that he should force to come to him because love has to be voluntary.
Yes, that's right. Because love cannot be forced. So the aim is to love the Supreme Lord. But that love cannot be forced, right? We cannot force anyone to love someone. That's beyond human conception. So therefore, if ultimately we have to develop love towards the Supreme Lord, that cannot be forced. And so therefore, Krishna never interferes with the free will of the living entity. And so he gives a choice. So when they go to the demigods, even that faith of that particular worshipper in that particular demigod also Krishna is only giving. So when Krishna sees here is a worshipper of demigod, he wants to worship this demigod, then Krishna gives that faith to that worshipper to worship that particular demigod and makes that faith steady.
Can I say something?
Okay.
Sometimes we worship the demigod. Sometimes we born in a Hindu family, you know, we do the same thing that our father or grandfather. We have a lack of knowledge.
Okay.
We do the same thing sometimes.
Yes.
So it's like that sometimes.
So you mean to say because the parents are worshipping, the grandparents are worshipping, therefore we worship?
Yes.
Yeah, that's fine. So it's a part of the same thing ultimately. Ultimately it is because because one does not have knowledge, one is in ignorance, and at the same time because of being influenced by the lower modes, right? Because of the influence of the lower modes, then if one is in goodness, then satmat sanjayate jnanam, then with the mode of goodness comes knowledge. So but if one is influenced by the lower modes, then one does not have knowledge, then one just continues. Okay, fine. So I'm reading from the second paragraph of his purport, almost in the middle of the purport. Prabhupada is writing an important sentence. He says, the particular mode of the devotional attitude of the living entity towards a particular type of demigod is also arranged by the Supreme Lord. Okay, so the devotional attitude of the living entity towards the demigod is also arranged by the demigod, by the Supreme Lord. The demigods cannot infuse the living entities with such an affinity. But because he is the Supreme Lord or the Super Soul is present in the hearts of all living entities, Krishna gives impetus to man to worship certain demigods. So ultimately it's Krishna only who even gives that devotional attitude of the worshipper towards that particular demigod. And in the 22nd verse he says, endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires, but in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone. So you see how the Lord is controlling everything? And that's what Krishna is, this chapter is on Vibhuti Yoga. Krishna is speaking about his own opulences and his own powers. And so Krishna is saying that how he practically controls everything. The worshipper's faith to worship the demigod comes from Krishna. The demigod, he has to give benefits to the demigod worshipper. How does he give that? Krishna gives. So you see, ultimately the worshipper is controlled by Krishna, the demigod is controlled by Krishna, the whole thing is controlled by Krishna. Krishna is in total control. And therefore Prabhupada writes in the purport, not the blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Lord. And therefore Prabhupada writes in his purport, the first line, the demigods cannot award benedictions to the devotees without the permission of the Supreme Lord. Right? And then, even if they award benedictions, what is the result? 23rd verse. Antavattu palam tesham tad bhavatyalpa medasam deva devaya joyanti madbhakta yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence worship the demigods, and their fruits are limited and temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, But my devotees ultimately reach my supreme planet. Okay, so the result is, even if they get benedictions from the demigods, they are temporary. Because they're material, therefore they're temporary. The demigods themselves are temporary, so the benedictions what they give, they are also temporary. And the worshippers of the demigods ultimately go to the planets of the demigods, which are also temporary. But those who worship the Supreme Lord, they ultimately achieve the Supreme Lord. Sorry? Okay, somebody please read this.
Why is it recommended that you worship the demigods?
Because if one goes from fulfilling the desire to a demigod, there is a connection of Vishnu. Because any yogi who performs demigods, it must be Vishnu first. The mantra says that with the connection of Vishnu orders to get this facility. So by worshipping the demigod, if he's sensible man, one day he will come to know that above the demigod there is Vishnu. So why am I worshipping this demigod? Why not Vishnu?
Okay, so we discussed this point yesterday, that how in the worship of the demigods, the chanting of the names of Vishnu, and also the Brahmanamic of knowledge, and so that's how slowly they get elevated to ultimately come to the platform of worshiping Vishnu.
Prabhu, just had a question.
My understanding, any demigod worship, where is Vishnu included? With regarding to Shakti worship, I don't find anything related to Vishnu. They proclaim Shakti to be supreme, they worship her to be supreme, right from the beginning to the end, same as Shiva.
If the worship is being done in an authorized way, then there has to be chanting of the names of Vishnu. That's one thing. And secondly, even if it may not be directly chanting, I have seen many demigod worship of Ganpati and so many other demigods, where at the beginning of the worship and the end of the worship, they actually chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. I don't know how many of you have noticed that. But usually they chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra at the beginning and the end of the worship. And even if that may not be the case, but still all Vedic mantras, they start with Om. And Om is the impersonal representation of the Supreme Lord. So that also purifies. Yes, Krishna? Yes,
the beginning of the ceremony, the Ajaman also in this ceremony.
Yes.
Near the end, Kaila Vata Narayana.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So usually there's always some chant,
huh?
Yes, that's right. So there's always some chanting of mantras which have Vishnu's name. It's always there. Yes, Prabhu?
How in the West we worship the demigod? I mean, Krishna is the desire of the West. If in the West, so how we worship the demigod, and we don't have such idea of the demigod. Unconsciously,
you mean?
Do we worship demigods unconsciously in the West?
Do we worship demigods unconsciously?
Yeah, in the West, Western people. Yeah. So how is it possible if you don't have knowledge of the
demigods? Okay. So you mean to say that if in the West somebody has material desires and he doesn't go to Vishnu, then where does he go? That's the question.
Go to church.
Huh? Okay, that could be one. See, if they don't worship, you're asking if they don't worship any demigod, then what's the result?
So why their material desires are fulfilled if they don't worship any demigod?
Then everything goes according to the law of karma. Everything just happens according to the law of karma.
But that also is the demigod.
Yes, the demigods are in control, that is true, but even if somebody doesn't worship a demigod, according to the law of karma things happen. You know, previous life, whatever papa punya they did, then depending upon that, then they get the result. If somebody goes to a demigod, and he worships the demigod, then the demigod becomes obliged, that's what we're reading here, the demigod becomes obliged to fulfill the benedictions of that person, and even that, of course, Krishna is in ultimate control. But if somebody doesn't worship the demigod, then what happens in life is simply based on karma.
If someone
really want something, is it also a problem?
Yeah. See, if I desire something, and I don't go to demigod, I don't worship anyone, then Krishna fulfills that desire depending upon whether I deserve it.
That's the karma.
Yeah, that's the karma. Yeah, that's right. So if according to my karma, I deserve that, then it will be fulfilled. If I don't deserve it.
And if I don't deserve, then I go to demigod.
Huh.
Does Krishna fulfill his desire or not?
Yeah, he can, because I'm taking the trouble of worshipping the demigod, doing some sacrifice, doing some puja. So that's the meaning of demigod worship, because I'm doing some sacrifice there. Right? Because of the sacrifice, then the demigod is pleased, and then the demigod, being a sort of devotee of the Supreme Lord, then he requests the Supreme Lord, you know, here's a worshipper, please fulfill his desire. Then Krishna sanctions. Okay? Okay, so now, okay, somebody please read this.
One should invite people chant Hare Krishna and then distribute prasada. This yajna will satisfy all the demigods, and thus there will be peace and prosperity in the world. In this age, the performance of sacrifice has been simplified. One can chant Hare Krishna, and by pleasing Krishna, one can satisfy all the demigods, all the matters.
Yes. By pleasing Krishna, one can satisfy all the demigods. What's the analogy? Yes, watering the root of the tree. Okay, before we go to this, we'll read the next verse. So till this verse, Krishna has spoken about the demigod worshippers, and the 24th verse, he is speaking about the impersonalist. Let's recite. Avyaktam vyaktim asannam manyante mam abuddhayah param bhavam jananto mamavyayam anuttamam. Right? So, avyaktam vyaktim apannam. So the impersonalists, they think that the Supreme Absolute Truth is avyaktam. Avyaktam means impersonal. And he has come into this world and he has taken a personal material form, that is vyaktam. Avyaktam has become vyaktam. So they are thinking that the Supreme Absolute Truth is impersonal, and now he has got a form in this world, but that form is material. So that's the conception of the impersonal. Unintelligent men, and Krishna calls them abuddhaya. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and I now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. And Prabhupada gives a very logical understanding to refute this point of impersonalism in his purport. You see the third line? Prabhupada says, Lord Krishna, in his personal form, is here speaking before Arjuna. And still, due to ignorance, impersonalists argue that the Supreme Lord ultimately has no form. I mean, it's just a logical point. The Prabhupada is saying, here is Krishna, he is a person speaking before Arjuna. So where is the question of being impersonal? A person has to speak, isn't it? If somebody is speaking, of course it can be an impersonal voice, but surely here it's a person, Krishna in a personal form is speaking to Arjuna. So where is the question of impersonalism? But of course the point is, as Prabhupada is writing in the second paragraph, second line, he says, only by the mercy of the Supreme Lord can the personality of the Supreme be known. That's the point. Without the mercy, it's not possible. And the very famous story for this, to very vividly illustrate this point, is the story of Sarvam Bhattacharya. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we know he was in the Jagannath temple, he fell down in ecstasy, Sarvam Bhattacharya came over there, brought him to his house, and Gopinath Acharya, so he came over there, and Gopinath Acharya was telling Sarvam Bhattacharya, this sannyasi is none other than the Supreme Personality of God. And Sarvam Bhattacharya immediately says, where is the proof? And Gopinath Acharya gives him all Shastric references to prove that how Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the Supreme Lord. And still, Sarvam Bhattacharya doesn't accept. And there was a small argument, and then finally somebody there says, okay, you know, don't take it so personally, so seriously, you know, we are after all family members, we're just arguing. But finally Gopinathacharya says, you will never understand, because you are a dry logician and you're like an oilless cake. A dry speculator. And then Gopinathacharya quotes this verse which Srila Prabhupada is quoting over here. You can see in the 10th canto. From the 10th canto, Atapi Dideva Padambujadvaya Prasad Leshanugrihita Evahi Janati Tattvam Bhagavan Mahim No No Chanyo Eko Pichram Vichinvan. He quotes this verse to explain this point. Prasad Leshanugrihita Evahi. Without a lesha, lesha means at least a small trace of mercy of the Supreme Lord, it's not possible to understand. Right? Unless and until one has, as I just read the translation, my Lord, if one is favored by even a slight trace of the mercy of your lotus feet, he can understand the greatness of your personality. But those who speculate to understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead are unable to know you, even though they continue to study the Vedas for many years. Right. So that's one point. And then in the next paragraph, Srila Prabhupada again brings out a very logical point again. So till now Krishna has spoken about the demigods, and Krishna has said those who worship demigods go to the planets of the demigods. And so I'm reading the next paragraph in between. He says, the worshippers of the demigods go to the different planets of the demigods, and those who are devotees of Lord Krishna go to the Krishna planet. Although this is clearly stated, the foolish impersonalists still maintain that the Lord is formless and that these forms are impositions. From the study of the Gita, does it appear that demigods and the abodes are impersonal? Right, so there are demigods and there are abodes. Then can we call this impersonal? So again, a very logical argument Prabhupada is putting forth. Clearly, neither demigods nor Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God, are impersonal. They are all persons. Lord Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he has his own planets, and the demigods have the arts. Okay? Yes, Prabhu.
This verse, I mean, I know very little Sanskrit, but it just seems like kind of clear, like what it's saying. How can the person kind of write a commentary on this verse? I mean, what do they say?
So that's the comment which Srila Prabhupada has given.
Well, how does
the
impersonalist comment on? I mean, that's Prabhupada's commentary.
But
what about impersonalists? What do they say about? Do you know anything about that?
Okay, so you're asking, what do the impersonalists comment on this verse?
Yeah.
Okay, when the impersonalists comment, they say, see, one thing is, there's always a good chance to play around with words, right, in Sanskrit. And so, even if it's said, avyaktam vyaktam apannam, so the unmanifest becomes manifest. But if you want, you can still argue. Where is it said that this manifest form is material or spiritual? You can still argue on that point. Yes, it is said that the impersonal takes a form, but it's never mentioned whether it is material or spiritual. And their point is, yes, there is a form, but it is material. That's the conception of the Mayavadis. And therefore they are called Mayavadis, because they say that the form of the Lord is Maya, is material. And that's the greatest offense against the Supreme Lord, to say that the form of the Lord is Maya, material. And that is why it said the destination for the Mayavadis is only hell, because of the offense they commit to the Supreme Lord. Right, so that's the point. So yes, they may say that yes, there is a form, but they say it's a material form, it's not a spiritual form. Yeah. Well, that's your opinion.
It is mentioned here.
Yes, Krishna is saying that Abhudaya are less intelligent. They can always say, well, that's your opinion. But, you know, if somebody wants to argue, one can argue anyway. And now, Krishna is explaining why. Why do the impersonalists never understand? What is the reason? 25th verse. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrataha mudoya navijanati loko ma madhamavyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them, I am covered by my internal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. Right? So Krishna remains covered by his internal potency, and that's what Srila Prabhupada also explains in his purport. So he gives a logical question there. So Krishna was present on this earth, so everyone was seeing Krishna, isn't it? There were so many people who were seeing Krishna, and Krishna was present on this earth. So then why it is said that Krishna is covered?
I heard that not everybody saw Krishna when he was on
this earth. Well, he had a form and they saw him.
Yes,
they didn't recognize him. Even though they saw him, they didn't actually recognize him as the Supreme Lord. So therefore, Duryodhan saw Krishna. What did he do? Yes, he insulted him. He tried to capture him. Even though actually Krishna showed the Virat Roop to him. But Duryodhan actually tried to capture him. Similarly, Shishupal, he's offending. So we find there were so many people who saw, but very few, only the pure devotees, actually recognized him as the Supreme Lord. So many people can see, but then the important thing is to recognize him as the Supreme Lord. So not everyone could do that because of the covering of Yoga Maya, the internal potency. Also, Prabhupada gives the other references from the Ishopanishad, Hiranmayana Patrena. So Krishna is covered by his impersonal Brahma Jyoti. And so not everyone can understand that Krishna is the Supreme Lord unless one receives the mercy of the Lord or his devotees. Okay, so here there are a few statements of Mayavad, and so on the basis of our discussions and what do we know. So can you refute this? Lord is formless and all forms are impositions. How will you refute this?
What is God?
So that's what I'm asking. This is the Mayavad theory. The Lord is formless and all forms are imposition. So how will you refute it?
This is only a statement. This is not evidence.
Okay, that's fine. But how will you prove that it's wrong?
The Lord is giving instructions to Arjuna, the battlefield.
Okay, that's one point Srila Prabhupada is making here, that yes, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, there's Krishna having a form. Are there any other arguments?
Like, in 724, Krishna is saying, unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I am the Supreme Personality of God and Krishna is impersonal before and acknowledged in his personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So Krishna is specifically explaining here that someone who has this attitude that the Lord is formless is described that they have small knowledge.
Okay, that's one reason. Okay, fine, yes, true.
They are not fallen, the greatest leader Shankaracharya. Shankaracharya himself is a
God. Okay, fine. Narayana Purohita. Okay. Okay, we take 1, 2, and 3.
Well, Krishna is complete. So, if we have a form, well, I guess that wouldn't defeat them. I'm just thinking about that because I would think that if Krishna is complete, if we have a form, then why wouldn't he have?
Yeah, actually, this was one of Prabhupada's arguments, actually. That's true. That if we have a form, my father has a form, his father has a form, and if you go that way, Krishna is the source of everyone, then why won't he have a form?
But I was just thinking that maybe the person who then thinks, well, that means he's material.
Well, okay, so then there are other verses to prove that point, but this is one logical argument Prabhupada definitely used. Yes?
There is a shloka in Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter, Sakri Vasam Jatanasana.
Okay, that verse of course speaks more about individuality than form. Natve vaham jata nasham natvam neme janatma nacha
dosha.
Okay, we can take that also. Okay, fine, thank you. Yes, Prabhu, you have something?
Yeah,
Okay. Okay, one last one, Rohit.
Yeah, I was
I don't know whether it's Prabhupada said or not, but what I'm saying, if Lord is
it's dangerous if you're saying something.
If Lord is formless, then how can he hear you, or how can he see if Lord is formless? So I would say it's just personal matter.
Okay, fine, okay. But then, okay, something more. Of course, yes, sir. Yeah, yeah, that's right. That's one of Prabhupada's argument also, that yes, there are demigods, the demigod worshippers, and the source of the demigods, the Supreme Lord, they all have a form, so why won't the Supreme Lord have a form? And of course, we have other references. What does the Brahma Samhita say? What does Lord Brahma say? Vigraha. Vigraha means form. Okay? So yeah, so we can have some reference like that. Okay, the second point says, Krishna is a prince, a powerful living entity, and an ordinary person. How would you refute that? Okay, they will say you're offending me. That sometimes Prabhupada use that. I'm not saying, Krishna is saying. Yes, true. Yeah, that's right. That's a good point actually. That comes in the next verse. Maybe I should have done the exercise after the next verse. But yes, that's the next verse actually. So anyways, we'll recite the next verse, 26th verse. Vedaham samatitani vartamanani cha arjunam bhavishyani cha bhutani mam tu vedana kashyanam. O Arjuna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that's happening in the present, all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. And Prabhupada writes this very clearly in his purport. Here the question of personality and impersonality is clearly stated. If Krishna, the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, were Maya, material, as the impersonalist consider him to be, then like the living entity, he would change his body and forget everything about his past life. Right, so that's a very valid refutation of this point. And towards the end of that paragraph he says, unless one is liberated from material contamination, he cannot know past, present and future. Right, so the liberated sages, they know past, present and future, like Vyasa. Okay, so that could be a refutation of that. Okay, and Krishna's body made of material nature, all his activities, his form, everything are Maya. Okay, similar point actually. Okay, fine. So this is a homework question for you. Please note down. Yeah, some homework, once in a blue moon. Yeah, it's about Maya. Yeah, that's true. Okay, so what's the illusory curtain that separates us from Krishna? Make a list of things that you think prevents you from seeing Krishna, then tell how you can overcome these things. So it's a good exercise actually for our personal application. Don't worry, 10 minutes more only. Done? So tomorrow we'll be asking each one of you answer to this question at the beginning of the class. Okay, fine?
No.
Okay, I think so that's good enough. If you haven't written, you can look at your phone. Okay. Then the next section, 26 to 30, is bewilderment of the living entity and its freedom through knowledge of Krishna. We already finished the 26th verse. So the link between the previous section and this section is this. So in the previous section, Krishna has, in the last verse, Krishna has said the living entities, they cannot understand me because of the Yogamaya curtain, then the question could be raised. So, does Krishna know everything about the living entities? Living entities cannot understand Krishna. Does Krishna know everything about the living entities?
Yeah,
yes. So, Krishna is answering that in the 26th verse. Okay? And then the question could be raised, why? What is the root cause? What is the root cause of the living entities' bewilderment in this material world? Why at all they are put under the influence of this illusory curtain of Yogamaya? And why are they bewildered? So the answer is the next verse. 27th verse, let's recite a very important and famous verse. Icha dvesha samuttena dvandva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sarge yanti parantata. First kind of Bharata, O conqueror of the four, all living entities are born into delusion, bewildered by the dualities arising from desire and hate. Right? Because of Icha and Dvesha. That's the basic reason for material existence. As Prabhupada writes, the fifth line in his purport, he says, the illusory energy is manifested in the duality of desire and hate. Due to desire and hate, the ignorant person wants to become one with the Supreme Lord and envies Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? Because of this, Icha and Dvesha, desire to enjoy independence of the Supreme Lord, envy towards the Supreme Lord, that's the reason why the living entity comes into this material world and is put in a state of delusion. So the next question could be, yes, sir.
But what is hate?
Hate, as Prabhupada says, envy actually. Yeah, I mean hate is born of envy, isn't it? We envy someone, we hate that person.
What is hate?
What's hate mean?
Is it anger?
Well, it's dislike, isn't it? It's dislike towards someone. When you don't like someone, that's called hate. Maybe a superlative degree of dislike. But it's basically, yes, envy towards the Supreme Lord. That's the reason for material existence of the living entity. Then who is qualified? Who is qualified to take up a devotional service?
Everyone.
Is someone qualified to take to devotional service? Krishna is asking the question in the next verse. 28th verse, let's recite. Yesham tvantagatam papam jananam punya karmanam te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dhrita vrataha. Persons have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. And Prabhupada writes, those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. And Vishnu Thakur gives a very nice purport to this, which explains what is this punya karmana. Please read this.
Who is qualified for bhakti? This verse answers, those who have punya, karma, who have destroyed sins partially, develop a predominance of sattva guna and diminished tamva guna. The result of this is they retreat and remove. Consequently, they become less attached. Then they have chance association with my devotees. Then they become completely free of sin by practice of worship. Being free completely of illusion, dvandva moha nimukta, they become steady, dridha vrata, in worshipping me. Thus, one should not consider that punya karma is the cause of any type of bhakti. Association with the devotees is the cause.
Okay, so here, this is an important point, very important point to understand, and that is the punya karma, pious activities, what is the result of that? They have more sattva-gun and reduced tamogun. Result is, there's a decrease in illusion. The result of that is, they become less attached. Then they have a chance association with my devotees. So because of the punya, because of the pious activities, there's a good likelihood, because they're in sattva, there's a good likelihood that they have attraction towards spiritual life, they have an attraction towards saintly association. So therefore they may go, they may invite sadhus to their house, or they may go to a place where there are sadhus and listen to them. And so because of that punya, there is a good likelihood that they come into association with devotees. And that association with devotees gives bhakti. The punya does not give bhakti. Please note this point. The punya karma does not lead to bhakti. Bhakti can only come from bhakta. Bhakti can only come from bhakta. Bhakti sanjayate bhakti. That's the eternal principle. Only a devotee can give devotional service. Punya karma does not give devotional service. Right? So here, the point that's being made is, because of punya karma, they're leading a life of sattvagun, and that makes their life conducive for devotee association. And so there's a good chance that they come into devotee association, then they get bhakti from the devotee. And that's the point he's making. Thus one should not consider that punya karma is the cause of any type of bhakti. Association with devotees is the cause. That's the relation between punya karma and bhakti. Yes, Prabhu?
What's the difference between punya karma and good fortune?
Difference between punya karma and good fortune. Well, the punya karma creates that conducive situation where they come into the association of devotees, and if they come into association of devotees, that's a good fortune. Right? And therefore there is this verse in, I suppose it's the 11th canto, where he says, Yadrucha matkathadho, that's how the verse begins. Yadrucha means somehow or other. Somehow or other, if one comes into the association of devotees, then they're fortunate. So this punya karma creates that conducive environment where they can, there's a good chance for them to get that devotee association. When they get that devotee association, they're fortunate. Right?
Yeah, I was sitting in a Bhagavad Gita this morning, and then the Sukha says, so many lifetimes of good fortune,
yes,
and that brings one to satsanga.
Yes. Okay. So that brings us to another important discussion, actually, which is about the various types of Sukriti. I begin my class tomorrow with discussing this point about Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about three types of Sukriti, and I think so that will further clarify this subject matter. But the important point at this point of time to note is that the punya karma is not the cause of bhakti. The punya karma creates that conducive environment where one gets the association of devotees, and the association of devotees is what gives the bhakti. Okay? And the 29th and the 30th verse, both of them are sort of like a summary of these two verses. You can read them on your own. Okay? So here in this chapter we find that Krishna has essentially explained about, first of all, he started with Maya Saptamana Partha. He's spoken about the importance of hearing. The first verse is describing pure devotional service. And the rest of the chapter is actually mostly dealing with the mixed devotional service. And those who surrender, those who do not surrender, he's speaking about the Karma Mishra Bhakta, the Jnana Mishra Bhakta, and he's also speaking about the qualification. The cause of the living entity's bewilderment and his material existence, and he's spoken about how to come out of that material existence and what's the qualification to come to pure devotional service. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. There are some announcements, kindly hold on for a minute. Okay, so I think so I'm supposed to tell you the questions for the open book assessment. So can somebody please give me a handbook? Okay, please open your books to page 45. So, it's question 3. Explain in our own words the proper understanding of demigod worship with reference to appropriate verses, purpose, and analogies from Bhagavad Gita 3.10 to 16 and 10.20-23, 9.20-25. Okay, that's the third question. That's a preaching application question, very important, very relevant for us. And then the other question is question 6. Question 6. Explain in your own words Krishna's relationship with the material world with reference to Sanskrit terms, propounds, purpose, and analogies given in Bhagavad Gita 9.4 to 10. This is a very, very important philosophical discussion. We should be discussing later, but that's also very, very important. Okay, so it's question 3 and question 6.
Both or either one?
No, no, both.
Following in the next Saturday or Sunday. And then also on the Saturday. Are we willing to have a class on Saturday?
This Saturday.
And then the following week we'll have one day free before the test. Yes?
Yeah.
We'll have class on Saturday.
Give the two options. One option is this. And the second option is not to have class on Saturday, but then continue till the third.
Yeah, if we don't have class on Saturday, then we'll have all 5 days class also the following week, and then Saturday of Sunday itself.
Saturday class.
Okay, take majority vote.
Okay.
Democracy.
Saturday class, okay. Alright, understood.
Friday off.
So Friday off. Saturday, the following Saturday will be then. Saturday on the test, when you come for the test, and bring both of the options. Okay, so now one announcement from my side. I'm not sure if I'm breaking the regulatory principle here. <laughs> of the MI. My daughter is coming with a tray of cake, wonderful cake, nice cake. She is trying to raise little funds so that she can go to Jagannath Puri with her colleagues, with Gurukuli team. She is coming here and she learned it too. If you don't have money with you, you can pay me later, tomorrow. But you can take a cake.
How
much is it? More than 50 rupees.
We'll
see. I didn't see it yet. So, during Prasadanji will be here, so we can enjoy the cake. If you have money, you can give immediately, or otherwise tomorrow. Okay, thank you very much. And I have some of the other things here, not all, and the rest I will give you tomorrow.